It's dark.
There's the bed floating back. Little man's taking his boots off. He's pulling his shirt over his head. He's beating his chest with his fist. He's climbing into bed.
Go on.
There's two women in bed. He looks at them both with his head cocked to one side. He's whistling through his teeth. No, he grips his little arms round one of the women.
Which one?
I can't see anymore. There's great clouds blowing again.
Oh, the main old cloud.
The morning is all singing. The Reverend Jenkins, busy on his morning calls, stops outside the welfare hall to hear Polly Garter as she scrubs the floors for the Mothers' Union dance tonight.
I love the man whose name was Tom. He was strong as a bear and 2 yards long. I loved a man whose name was Dick. He was big as a barrel and 3 feet 6. And I loved a man whose name was Harry. 6 feet tall and sweet as a cherry. But the one I loved best, awake or asleep, was little Willie Wee and he's 6 feet deep. Oh, Tom, Dick, and Harry were 3 fine men, and I'll never have such loving again. But little Willie Wee, who took me on his knee, little Willie Wee was the man for me. Now men from every parish round run after me and roll me on the ground. But whenever I love another man back, Johnny from the hills or Sailing Jack, I always think, as they do what they please, of Tom, Dick, and Harry, who are tall as trees. But most I think, when I'm by their side, of little Willie Wee, who down and died. Oh, Tom, Dick, and Harry were 3 fine men, and I'll never have such loving again. But little Willie Wee, he took me on his knee. Little Willie Weevil is a man for me.
Praise the Lord. We are a musical nation.
And the Reverend Jenkins hurries on through the town to visit the sick with jelly and poems.
There goes the Reverend, with his brawley in his oats, with Mr. Waldo at the smoke-brown window of the unwashed sailor's arms.
Sinbad.
Good.
Sinbad.
Yeah.
Come up, Sinbad. Point us out with Noah again.
But Mr. Waldo has just received another paternity suit.
Noah gets in back. I'm on the treacle today.
And the silent fishermen flush down their pints.
Mr. Waldo, I dote on that gossamer Bynum. She's a lady all over.
No lady that I know is.
Mr. Waldo is thinking of a woman, soft as Eve and sharp as sciatica, to share his bread-pudding bed.
And if only Grandma died,
cross me heart, I'd get down on me knees, Mr. Waldo, and I'd say, Miss Gossamer, I'd say.
When birds do sing, hey, ding-a-ding-a-ding, hey, ding-a-ding-a-ding, hey, ding-a-ding-a-ding, hey.
Come to get my work, refined men, and I'll never have such
ding-a-ding
again.
The morning school is over, and the spring sunrise hear the naughty, forfeiting children tumble and rhyme on the cobble.
Johnny Christo.
Down through the cotton flowers of her dress into the bell of her heart and buzzes in the honey there and couches and kisses lazy, loving and boozed in her red berried breast. Eyes run from the windows and the trees of the streets, steaming gossamer and strip her to the nipples and the bees. She blazes naked past the sailor's arms, the only woman on the diadem earth. Sinbad sailors places on her thighs still dew damp from the first man-growing cockcrow garden, his reverend goat-bearded hand.
I don't care if he is common.
She whispers to her salad day deep self.
I want to gobble him up. I don't care if he does drop his H's.
She talks to the stripped and mother of the world, big beamed and eve hip spring of herself.
So long as he's all cucumber and hooves.
Sinbad Sailors watches her go by, demure and proud and school mom in her crisp flowered dress and sun-defying hat, with never a look or lilt or riddle, the butcher's unmelting ice maiden daughter, veiled forever from the hungry hug of his eyes.
Oh, gossamer binding, why are you so proud?
He grieves to his Guinness.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful gossamer bee. I wish that you were for me. Why are you so educating?
She feels his goat beard tickle her in the middle of the world like a tuft of wiry fire, and turns in a terror of delight away from his ships and whiskery conflagration, and sits down in her kitchen to a plate heaped high with chips and the kidneys of lamb. In the blind-drawn dark dining room of schoolhouse, dusty and echoing as a dining room in a vault, Mr. and Mrs. Pugh are silent over cold, gray cottage pie. Mr. Pugh reads as he forks the shroud meat in from Lives of the Great Poisoner. He has bound a plain brown paper cover round the book. Slyly, between slow mouthfuls, he side-spies up at Mrs. Pugh, poisons her with his eye, and goes on reading. He underlines certain passages and smiles in secret.
Persons with manners do not read a table,
says Mrs. Pugh. She swallows a digestive tablet big as a horse pill and washes it down with clouding pea soup water.
Some persons were brought up in pig sties.
Pigs. Oh, don't read a table, dear.
Bitterly, she flicks dust from the broken cruet. It settles on the pie in a thin, mass brain.
Pigs. I can't read, my dear.
I know one who can.
Alone, in the hissing laboratory of his wishes, Mr. Pugh minces among bad bats and jeroboams, tiptoes through spinnies of murdering herbs, agony dancing in his crucibles, and mixes, especially for Mrs. Pugh, a venomous porridge unknown to toxicologists that will scald and viper through her till her ears fall off like figs, her toes grow big and black as balloons, and steam comes screaming out of her navel.
You know best, dear.
And quick as a flash, he ducks her in rat soup.
What's that book by your trop, Mr. Hugh?
It's a theological work, my dear. Called Lives of the Great Saints.
Mrs. Pugh smiles. An icicle forms in the cold air of the dining vault.
I saw you talking to a saint this morning. Saint Polygarta. She was martyred again last night. Mrs. Organ Morgan saw her with Mr. Waldo.
And when they saw me, they pretended they were looking for nests,
says Mrs. Organ Morgan to her husband with her mouth full of fish as a pelican.
But you don't go nesting.
dressing in long combinations, I said to myself, like Mr. Waldo was wearing, or with your dress nearly over your head like Polly Garter's. Oh, they didn't fool me.
One big bird gulp and the flounder's gone.
And when you think of all those babies she's got with them, all I can say is she'd better give up bird nesting. That's all I can say. It isn't the right kind of hobby at all for a woman that can't say no. Even to midgets. And you remember Bob Spick? He was no bigger than a baby himself, and he gave her two. But they're two nice boys, so we'll say that. Fred, Spiff, and Arthur. Sometimes I like Fred best, and sometimes I like Arthur. Who do you like best, Organ?
Oh, Bach, without any doubt. Bach every time for me.
Organ, Morgan, you haven't been listening to a word I said. It's organ, organ, all the time with you.
And then comes Dreamer.
Patterns with manners do not nod at table.
Mr. Pugh cringes awake. He puts on a soft, soaping smile. It is sad and gray under his nicotine, egg-yellow, weeping walrus Victorian mustache worn thick and long in memory of Dr. Crippen.
You should wait until you retire to your sty,
says Mrs. Pugh, sweet as a razor. His fawning, measly quarter smile freezes. Sly and silent, he foxes into his chemist's den, and there, in a hiss and prussic circle of gauldrons and vials brim full with pox and the black death, cooks up a fricassee of deadly nightshade, nicotine, hot frog, cyanide, and bat spit for his needling stalactite hag and bednag of a pokerback nutcracker wife.
I beg your pardon, dear.
Lord Cutlass, in his kitchen full of time, squats down alone to a dogfish marked Fido of peppery fish scraps and listens to the voices of his 66 clocks, one for each year of his loony age, and watches with love their black and white moony loud with faces tucking the earth away. Slow clock, quick clock, pendulum heart knock, china, alarm, grandfather, cuckoo, clock shaped like Noah's whirring ark, clock that bicker in marble ships, clocks in the wombs of glass women. Hourglass chimers, too weak to woo clocks. Clocks that clock tunes. Vesuvius clocks, all black bells and lava. Niagara clocks that cataract their ticks. Old time weeping clocks with ebony beards. Clocks with no hands, forever drumming out time without ever knowing what time it is. His 66 singers are all set at different hours. Lord Cutglass lives in a house and a life at sea. Any minute or dark day now, the unknown enemy will loot and savage downhill, but they will not catch him napping. 66 different times in his fish slimy kitchen, ping, strike, tick, chime, and come.
I'm never delayed for anything, not even the day of judgment.
Sunny, slow, lulling afternoon yawns and moons through the dozy town. The sea lolls, laps, and idles in with fishes sleeping in its lap. The meadows still as Sunday, the shut-eyed tasseled bulls, the goat and daisy dingles nap happy and lazy, the dumb duck ponds snooze.
And I'll never have such loving again. Now when farmers' boys, on the first fair day, come down from the hills to drink and be gay, before the sun sets, I'll lie there in their arms, for their good dad boys from the lonely farm. But I always think we tumble into bed. Oh, the little Willie Weasel is dead, dead, dead.
Cloud sag and pillow on Larrigib Hill. Pigs grunt in a wet wallow bath and smile as they snort and dream. They dream of the acorn swill of the world, rooting for pig fruit, the bagpipe dugs of the mother sow, the squeal and snuffle of the yeses of the women pigs in rut. They mud-bask and snout in the pig-loving sun, their tails curl, they rollick and slobber and snore to deep, smug, after-swill sleep. Donkeys angelically drowse on donkey down.
Captain Cat, at his window thrown wide to the sun and the clippered seas he sailed so long ago when his eyes were blue and bright, slumbers and voyages, earringed and rolling, I love you, Rosie Prover, tattooed on his belly. He brawls with broken bottles in the fug and babble of the dark, dark bars, roads with a herd of short and good-time cows in every naughty port, and twines and souses with the drowned and blowsy-breasted dead. He weeps as he sleeps and sails.
One voice of all he remembers most dearly as his dream buckets down. Lazy early Rosie with the flaxen thatch, whom he shared with Tom Fred the donkey man and many another seaman, speaks to him from the bedroom of her dust. In that gulf and haven, fleets by the dozen have anchored for the little heaven of the night. But she speaks to Captain Napping Cat alone. Mrs. Probert,
Dublin,
Jack. Wax white and ask for Rosie. Is the one love of his sea life that was sardine with women.
Easy as easy, my true sweetheart. Seas green as a bean. Seas gliding with swans in the seal barking mold.
What seas were rocking, my little deckhand. My favorite husband. In your sea boots and hunger. My duck, my whale, my honey, my daddy, my pretty sugar sailor with my name on your belly. When you were a boy, long, long ago.
I'll tell you no lies. The only sea I saw was the sea salt sea, with you riding on it. Lie down, lie easy. Let me shipwreck in your thighs.
Knock twice.
moving. Close it. Close it, Papa.
Remember her. She is forgetting. The earth which filled her mouth is vanishing from her. Remember me. I have forgotten you. I am going into the darkness of the darkness. Forever. I have forgotten that I was ever born.
Cat is crying. Come back. Come back.
Cut the silences and echoes of the passages of the eternal night.
He's crying all over his nose.
Come back. Come back.
He's got a nose like strawberries.
And then the child forgets him, too. She sees in the still middle of the Blue Bag Bay No Good Boyle fishing from the Zanzibar.
No Good Boyle gave me 3 pennies yesterday. But I wouldn't.
Boyle catches a whalebone corset. It is all he has caught all day.
Bloody funny fish.
Mrs. Dye bred, too.
You
gypsies up in his mind's slow eye, dressed only in a bangle.
Would you like this nice white corset that his eye bred too?
No, I won't.
Or a bite of my little apple?
You. No good. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh nasty boy.
She shakes her brass nightgown, and he chases her out of his mind. And when he comes gusting back, there in the bloodshot center of his eye,
a
geisha girl grins and bows in a kimono of rice paper.
No good boy, yo.
He sighs as she writhes politely. The land fades, the sea bucks silently away, and through the warm white cloud where he lies, silky, tingling, uneasy Eastern music undoes him in a Japanese minute.
I want to be good, Boyo, but nobody will let me.
The afternoon buzzes like lazy bees round the flowers round Mayrose Cottage. Nearly asleep in the field where the nanny goes hum and gently but the sun, she blows love on a puffball.
He loves me. He loves me not. He loves me. He loves me not. He loves me. That dirty old fool.
Lazy, she lies alone in clover and sweet grass. 17 and never been sweet in the grass. Ho, ho. The Reverend Eli Jenkins, inky in his front parlor or poem room, tells only the truth in his life work. The main industry, history, shipping, topography, flora and fauna of the town he worships in, the White Book of Laregum. Portraits of bards and famous preachers, all fur and wool from the squint to the kneecap, hang over him, heavy as sheep, next to faint lady watercolors, a pale green milk wood like a lettuce salad dying. His mother, propped against a pot in a palm, with her wedding ring waist and bust like a black cloth dining table, suffers in her stays.
Oh, angels, be careful there with your knives and forks.
There is no known likeness of his father, Esau, who, undog-collared because of his little weakness, was sized to the bone one harvest by mistake when sleeping with his weakness in the corn. He lost all ambition and died with one leg.
Poor Dad. to die of drink and agriculture.
Laregab Hill, writes the Reverend Jenkins in his poem Room.
Laregab Hill, that mystic tumulus, the memorial of peoples that dwelt in the region of Laregab before the Celts left the land of summer and where the old wizards made themselves a wife out of flowers.
Mayrose Cottage, still lying in clover listening to the nanny goats chew, has drawn circles of lipstick round her nipples.
I'm fat. I'm a bad lot. God will strike me dead. I'm 17. I'll go to hell.
She lies deep, waiting for the worst to happen.
You just wait. I'll stand till I blow up.
Bessie Bighead greets the cows by the name she gave them when they were maidens.
Meg! Meg! Buttercup! Ma! Van from the castle. Theodosia and Dave.
They bow their heads. The coming of the end of the spring day is already reflected in the lakes of their great eyes.
Look up Bessie Bighead in the white book of Laregab, and you will find the few haggard rags and the one poor glittering thread of her history laid out in pages there with as much love and care as the lock of hair of the first lost love. Conceived in Milkwood, born in a barn, wrapped in paper, left on a doorstep. Big-headed and bass-voiced, she grew in the dark until long-dead Gomer Owen kissed her once when she wasn't looking because he was dead. Now in the light, she'll work, sing, milk, say the cow's sweet name, and sleep until the night sucks out her soul and spits it into the sky. In her lifelong love light, holily Bessie milks the fond lake-eyed cows, and dusk showers slowly down over byre, sea, and town. Now the town is dusk. Each cobble, donkey, goose and gooseberry street is a thoroughfare of dusk. And dusk and ceremonial dusk and night's first darkening snow and the sleep of birds drift under and through the live dusk of the place of love. Laregab is the capital of dusk. And Cherry Owen, sober as Sunday as he is every day of the week, goes off happy as Saturday to get drunk as a deacon as he does every night.
I always say she's got two husbands, one drunk and one sober.
And aren't I the lucky woman, because I love them both. Yeah?
Evening, Cherry.
Evening, Sinbad. What do you have? Too much.
The sailor's arms is always open.
Oh, gossamer, open yours.
Mr. Waldo, in his corner of the sailor's arms, sings.
In Pembroke City, when I was young, I lived by the castle keep. Sixpence a week was my wages for working for the chimney sweep. Six cold pennies he gave me, not a farthing more or less. And all the fare I could afford was parsnip gin and watercress. Sweep, sweep, sweep. I wept through Pembroke City, poor and barefoot in the snow.
No dear kind young woman took pity. Poor little chimney sweep, she said, black as the ace of spades. Oh, nobody swept my chimney since my husband went his ways. Come and sweep my chimney. Come and sweep my chimney.
She sighed to me with a blush.
Come and sweep my chimney. Come and sweep my chimney.
Bring along your chimney brush.
The drinkers in the Sailor's Arms drinks to the failure of the dance.
Down with the waltzing and the skipping.
Righteously, says Cherry Owen, who has just downed 17 pints of flat, warm, thin Welsh bitter beer.
Dancing isn't natural.
Organ Morgan goes to chapel to play the organ. He'll play alone at night to anyone who'll listen. Lovers, revelers, the silent dead, tramps, sheep. He sees Bach lying on a tombstone.
Johann Sebastian. Oh, Johann Sebastian, mighty Bach. Oh, Bach, Bach.
The hell with you.
Says Cherry Owen, who was resting on the tombstone on his way home. A farmer's lantern glimmers on Larrigate hillside.
Unmarried girls, alone in their privately bridled bedroom, powder and curl for the dance of the world. They make in front of their looking glasses haughty or come-hithering faces for the young men outside in the street, at the lamplit leaning corners, who wait in the all-at-once wind to wolves and whistle. And down in the dusking town, Jack Black prepares once more to meet his Satan in the wood. He grinds his night teeth, shuts his eyes, climbs into his religious trousers, their flies sewn up with cowper's thread, and pads out, torched and bibled, grimly, joyfully, into the already sinning dusk.
Off to Gomorrah!
Mrs. Ogmore Pritchard, at the first drop of the dusk shower, shuts all her sea view doors, draws the germ-free blinds, sits erect on a high-backed hygienic chair, and wills herself to cold, quick sleep. At once, at twice, Mr. Ogmore and Mr. Pritchard, who all dead day long have been gossiping like ghosts in the woodshed, planning the loveless destruction of their glass widow, reluctantly sigh and sidle into her clean house.
You first, Mr. Ogmore.
After you, Mr. Pritchard.
No, no, Mr. Ogmore. You widowed her first.
And in through the keyhole, with tears where their eyes once were, they ooze and grumble.
Husband?
She says in her sleep. There is acid love in her voice for one of the two shambling phantoms. Mr. Ogmore hopes that it is not for him. So does Mr. Pritchard.
I love you both.
Oh, Mrs. Ogmore.
Oh, Mrs. Pritchard.
As soon as it'll be time to go to bed, tell me your task in order.
We must take our pajamas from the drawer, Mark pajamas.
And then you must take them off.
Oh. Dusk is drowned forever until tomorrow. The town is a hill of windows, and from the larruped waves, the light of the lamps and the windows call back the day and the dead that have run away to sea. And at the doorway of Bethesda House, the Reverend Jenkins recites to Larrigate Hill his evening poem.
Every morning when I wake, dear Lord, a little prayer I make. Oh, please to keep thy lovely eye on all poor creatures born to die. And every evening at sundown, I ask a blessing on the town. For whether we last the night or no, I'm sure is always touch and go. We are not wholly bad or good, who live our lives under milkwood, And thou, I know, wilt be the first to see our best side, not our worst. Oh, let us see another day. Bless us this holy night, I pray. And to the sun we all will bow and say goodbye. But just for now. All over the calling dark, babies and old men are bribed and lullabied to sleep.
Hush-a-bye, baby, the Sandman is coming. Lullaby,
unwinking men like parrots, and in their little dark, in the lit and bustling young kitchen corners, all night long they watch beady-eyed the long night through in case death catches them asleep.
And in the springing night, Mr. Morg Edwards and Miss Bonwy Price, happily apart from one another, at the top and sea end of town, write there every night letters of love and desire. In the warm white book of Laregab, you will find the little island of their contentment.
Oh, my Mog, I'm yours forever.
And she looks around with pleasure at her own neat, never dull room, which Mr. Morg Edwards will never enter.
Come to my arms.
And he hugs his lovely money to his own heart.
The thin night darkens. Sleep creeps down through the moonless town. Mr. Waldo, drunk in the milk, good night, hugs his lovely Polly Garter under the eyes and rattling tongues of the neighbors and the birds, and he does not care. He smacks his live red lips. But it is not his name that Polly Garter whispers as she lies under the oak and loves him back. 6 feet deep, that name sings in the cold earth.
But I always think, as we tumble into bed, of little Willie Weasel is dead.
The dead come out in their Sunday best.
The voyages of his peers, Captain Cat sails to see the dead.
Dancing Williams? Jonah Jarvis.
Curly, Bevan. Rosie Tuckett.
Rosie, she's gone. She has forgotten everything.
come back.
Listen to the night breaking.
Come back.
He is moving in the street. The processional, salt, slow, musical wind in Coronation Street and Cockle Row. And you can hear the hushed town breathing.
A breeze from the creased water sighs the streets close under milk-waking wood. And suddenly, the wind-shaken wood springs awake for the second dark time this one spring day.
Okay.
Take all the seeds and sprouts and begin planting. I'm starting all over, Noah.
Right away, Lord.
Gabriel, can you spare a minute?
Yes, sir, Lord.
Well, it's dead.
So I see.
Don't seem to set you up much.
Well, Lord, tain't none of my business.
It's my business. It was my idea. Every bit of it is my business and nobody else's.
I only hope it's going to work out all right.
And did it work out?
No, it didn't. The minute the Lord turned his back, there they was, bad as ever.
What did the poor Lord do then?
Oh, he let him go on for a spell. Then one day he looked down from heaven, and what he see, he don't like at all.
I spotted this thunderbolt this bad.
Thank you.
Thank you.